Scared money don't make no money. Do, do, do. What's going on, bus riders? Your bus driver here, and I got some info for you. Hi, guys. That everyone new to the show may not know, but we just finished taking this tour bus around South America, and we got some incredible stories from our journey to share with you. And that is on our YouTube channel over at On The Bus Podcast. Whether it was making cocaine with some narcos in Colombia, discovering the best carnival you've never heard of, or running around like zebras in La Paz, head on over to our channel. Check out what is going on over there. Let's collab. We're gearing up for another season in another country at the moment. But we're cooking up some incredible works in the process. More podcasts, new adventures, more storytelling. So contact us at On The Bus and let's get the wheels turning on some great content creation. Now, today's guest, Alexa Carlin, co-founder of WEX, which is the Women Empowerment Expo. WEX is a platform for women entrepreneurs to gain support, find funding, and meet other like-minded women. Her next WEX event will be in Fort Lauderdale Convention Center on November 10th. So ladies, be sure to check out womenempowermentexpo.com to find out if tickets are still available. Damn you dinger, Google. Yes, the show. Alexa has a credible backstory, which helped get her where she is today. And before I tell you anything else about this show, without you listening, I'm going to go ahead and give you Alexa Carlin.
Now we're live.
Don't just swoop in this time and just dive in on the hello though.
All right. Well, welcome on the bus, both of you. Welcome on the bus, Alexa.
Thank you for having me.
I know we've been trying to have you on the show. This could be the fifth time that I've invited you to actually come on.
Well, we're making it happen.
Yeah.
Making it happen. And I think you got us both in the same place to be on a show together, because we haven't been on a show together in...
That's right. We haven't been on a show together since Chile.
Oh,
really?
Yeah.
Oh, see, I'm the connector.
Yeah. Perfect.
Magnet connector. You're doing something. And you just have an incredible, incredible story. I mean, first of all, tell people, you know, what you do, even before you get into, you know, how you got there and why you do what you do.
So I am, and thank you, I'm a public speaker and founder and CEO of the Women in Power Expo, which is the largest event for female entrepreneurs and female leaders, with the mission to equip them with the knowledge, the tools, and the community to help them create and grow successful businesses.
So what the backstory of you is pretty intense and pretty crazy. So what, you know, tell the viewers and tell me exactly what happened when you were 21 when you got into the induced coma?
Yeah. So I was a few months from graduation, you know, I'm like ready to move to New York City, everything, like when you're a graduate at that age, yeah, you know, your whole life's in front of you. And then all of a sudden I just felt like everything was taken from me. I got induced into a medical coma out of nowhere. My body went into septic shock. And, you know, during this time...
Wait, what is septic shock?
Oh, thanks for asking. A lot of people forget to ask, so sometimes I just forget to share. But sepsis is when a bacteria gets into your bloodstream and starts killing all of your organs within hours. And so this bacteria could be from anything. Like, I met people who had sepsis from a toothache or a bug bite. And unfortunately, they never found out the cause of where the bacteria came from me, but it's a time sensitive thing. And 1 in 3 people die from sepsis. So I was very lucky. Mm-hmm. They gave me a 1% chance. And when your body goes into shock, it's basically when you waited too long. So I had flu-like symptoms, you know, shivers, high fever, but I'm a 21-year-old, you know, I have the flu, nothing can happen to me.
It's just a bad hangover, that's
exactly,
all.
Exactly, yeah. So I took some medicine, and I was actually getting ready to celebrate a milestone in my business at the time. I was running a blog called Hello Perfect, and I had all these people coming in from out of town. My mom was in town. And a few hours before the party, my mom was like, we have to cancel the party. I'm taking you to the emergency room. And because she saw my heart beating out of my neck. Shit. And I was having a hard time being able to breathe. And I remember they took my mom into a separate room where I was like on a ventilator and getting pumped with fluids, which ended up giving me severe pneumonia. And they said, call your family. She has 24 hours to live. So I was in a coma for 6 days. And during this time...
Do you remember going into the coma? Like, do you remember your consciousness sort of slipping away?
Yes, I remember. So it was my mom and my best friend was with me. And my best friend was the one I traveled all through Europe with. And I remember she was singing me this Bruno Mars song because when we were in Berlin, one of her really good friends passed away while we were in Berlin. And so she really had no one to contact. We didn't have like cell phones. And I remember we were in the back of a cab and that this Bruno Mars song came on where it was You Can Count on Me. And so I sang it to her when she was like in the lowest part of her life. And then she was singing it to me right before I went into the coma.
Don't mind our laughing at Berlin. We just have a
story. Yeah.
We'll always laugh at the phrase Berlin.
A connection with Berlin.
Okay. Yeah. So I remember that part. And then I remember vividly what I was imagining while I was in the coma and while I was out of the coma, because when I was out of the coma, I still had a mask on my face, a tube down my throat, and I was hooked up to 9 different bags of antibiotics. So I wasn't able to move, breathe, or speak. So all I had was my mind. And I remember a few different visions, hallucinations, whatever you want to call it, whatever you want to believe, that I was having during this time. And one of them was, I was standing, this was when I was in the coma, I was standing in this like field of green grass, and this green does not exist in this world. It's so vibrant, so beautiful. And in front of me were all these orange mountains, and I just felt so alive, but I wasn't in a body. I was just this being of light running with the wind. And
been there.
Fast forward. Yeah.
Yeah. Ayahuasca. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Not in the same state, but
yeah. I actually just watched a documentary on that. So I fast forward just a little bit about this story was I still picture this like as real as this reality right now. And this was January when this happened. And so March, you know, I was still healing. And so I couldn't go on a regular spring break trip. Just like fast forwarding the story. But so my mom's like, I heard of this really spiritual place called Sedona, Arizona. We should go. And I never looked up pictures or saw it. But one of my mom's friends like took us up Bell Rock and we climbed to the top. There was a prayer box. And then for lunch, she took us to this green like grass, this field. And right in front of me were all the orange mountains. And I just stood there and it was like this vision that I had while I was in the coma came alive. And it was such this like this overwhelming feeling of how powerful our thoughts are. Really understanding that what we think really does have an impact into what we're bringing about in our life. And that could just be about the feelings that we're having or how we're perceiving a situation. But this was definitely life-changing in the sense of not only this near-death experience, but understanding that we must not wait for things to change in our life. We have to change them ourselves. And I was waiting to graduate college to, you know, start my life because I was going through a difficult time a few months before that. Or even after this, I was diagnosed with an autoimmune disease and waiting to feel better. But, you know, with a chronic illness, you're not always going to be 100% perfect. And I think that's with anything in life. Even with business, like taking what I learned health-wise and implementing it in my business has helped me grow my business to be the largest event for female leaders within its first year, because I didn't wait until I felt I was ready.
So you come out, you have you come out, you have an extremely powerful thought, and it guided you to where you're at today, right? Yeah. But what do you think it is about sort of, there's a rare few people that kind of has happened to, but they all seem to have sort of that life-changing, whether they saw God or they spoke to someone, or what do you think that is? Like, what do you think your brain was? I don't know. I just think it's extremely powerful that everyone has that similar scenario to happen to them.
I think it's different for everyone. And I think we shouldn't be held down by, oh, I believe in God, or I believe in the universe, or a higher power. I think it's just you either want to believe in something that's more powerful than your own body, or you don't. And to me, believing is way more fun. So why wouldn't you?
Yeah, true.
You know, why wouldn't you believe that you can, you know, create your dreams? Why wouldn't you want to believe that, you can turn your life around. So it's as simple and complicated as that. And a lot of people have asked me, like, did you see your body? You know, like a lot of people have had that or talked about that experience. I didn't. I was in this like place of bliss. I wasn't scared at all. That's another thing. Like, I was so calm, but at the same time, I never once thought this was the end, ever. Even when I was that being of light, I was just so at peace, and I knew that something was coming. And it wasn't like me running into the other door or whatever people want to believe. It was just this environment that kept me strong enough to get out of the coma. And then when I was out of the coma, like I said, how I was only had my mind, I was in so much physical pain, like pain that I would never wish upon anyone in the world, like so much pain.
Septic can give that situation gives you a lot of pain.
I had a tube down my throat. Yeah. I was like taped all up. I had a needle.
The
like,
amount of swelling you're going with that, and then your body like putting pressure around each of those things that are inside your body.
I didn't visualize it. I just kind of assumed like all these little bugs were just attacking all the different. They like escaped into your body and were attacking you. And it was,
yeah, plus your yeah, well, organ failure from
right
from
organ
the bacteria
failure.
Attacking.
So you're very weak and also intense migraines, and they can't and you can't have water. So because I wasn't able to drink any water, and all I wanted was water. And I pictured myself on my high school track. And I would say, like, I don't know why, because I did not run track.
What a nightmare.
Yeah. You have to picture yourself in a different place than you are when you're in physical pain, or else you can't go on. Like, that's how I describe it. Like, there was no way to continue if I just kept my mind in the place I was. And so I was running around this track, and I was picturing my friends and family at the end with this giant bucket of ice cold water ready to like pour all down me. And I was just like, water at the end of the race, water at the end of the race. And that's what I kept my focus on. And sooner or later, I got to the end of the race and got the water. And I just pictured that end result. And at another thing that I envisioned while I was in this state was I knew that I didn't know what sepsis was, by the way. I didn't look it up for probably a good 2 months until after I got out of the hospital, because my mom wouldn't look it up because they said it's like really, you know,
it's
bad.
An evil disease,
yeah, it's very bad. So I didn't know what it was, but I pictured all of my organs dying, like black. Kind of like when you're younger and they teach you about a smoker's lung and a healthy lung. Mm-hmm. The smoker's lung was my whole body, and the healthy pink color was my mind, because that was the only thing that
you saw.
I
this
could
while you were in the coma.
Not when I was out of the coma, okay. But I was still in the danger zone. So still, like I said, I only had my mind. So that's what I pictured. Couldn't control anything else. And I would push down this healthy pink color to the rest of my body to try to heal it. And that's all I did with every ounce of energy I had. I would just push down this healthy pink color. And I've told this story to, well, now a number of people, probably thousands of people through my speaking. But I told it to a few different doctors in like holistic medicine and just people I've encountered on my journey. And this one doctor, I forgot his name, but he said, you did exactly what I teach in my book, how he's healed people through the healing color or through the power of mind and envisioning that power. And I don't know if, I mean, I believe like everything is together. So it was my amazing nurses at Shands Hospital and medical innovation on top of the strength that I had.
I think, yeah, go ahead.
No, I mean, it seems like we put a lot of pressure and constraints on believing and the ideas that we can believe in. You know, we're talking about, you know, how serious we take something from religion, or, you know, believing in whatever kind of energy, power, voodoo, BS you want to believe in or what you want to think about. But that seems to constrict even the way, you know, we project out, you know, and the ideas that we want. And the ideas that we want to create, or the dreams that we have, or the dreams we want to create, you know, what's the manifestation or manifesting mm-hmm. is one of the big things for people, whether they're trying to get out of a tough situation or they have different kind of goals or accomplishments they want to achieve. It's kind of projecting them, starting off with just by, you know, saying the goal, saying the idea, and presenting it out there. And, you know, a lot of people who do end up speaking or do public speaking or motivational speaking, you know, it seems like they either, you know, push themselves to that edge. And I think when you were telling that story about you just saying, I got to get to the finish line. I got to get to the finish line because I have to run track and then I'm going to be able to reach that goal. I know at the end and when I'm able to escape whatever it is I'm doing and how I'm doing it, that I'm going to get to that point. He was saying like most people that are, I wouldn't say fortunate enough, but fortunate enough to come out of those situations where they've been that impaired, they've been that injured or in a coma, you know, there is no like wall or veil, or it doesn't exist as much anymore because,
yeah,
you know, you've seen the end. You've been to that
right,
point.
It's not, the little things aren't as scary, put it that way.
Yeah.
And also, like when I was in that state, I was like, why did I care so much about getting an A on my test? I thought about that and I'm like, oh my God, why did I waste my, no. But that's the thing. I, you know, through everything I've been through, a lot of people couldn't understand, especially with a chronic illness where you look perfect on the outside, but you might be hurting on the inside. A lot of people couldn't understand that. And someone told me, you know, if people are complaining about a cold or about whatever it may be, at the time I was really like upset when people would complain about the littlest things. I'd be like, why, you know, your life is great. Like, why are you focusing on this little thing? And why are you spending energy complaining? But it's the worst thing in their life right now.
Yeah.
And you have to have empathy for that. And that's what it was something that I had to work on. But even now, I mean, 5 years later, I still, you know, I'm still a human being. So it's not like, oh, that veil's complete. But it really is just about being mindful enough to take a step back and see the bigger picture of everything that's going on. And like having faith in yourself, faith in your dreams and believing in that.
I think scientifically, actually, it makes complete sense. What you're saying, how you can focus on how you focused on the pink, right? The specific energy, because I think as humans, we're only supposed to see a certain amount of stimuli going on per day. And like, for instance, if you meditate, you can focus on your breath. You can focus. My hand went through a fence, right? And I can't feel. But when I first, and I lost like, completely severed this nerve in my hand. So right after that happened and I was in bed, I would meditate and focus. And all of a sudden I could become the nerve in my hand. And I could feel the energy shooting from down my shoulder in through my hand. So I can only imagine that if you can focus on your breath, which is a subconscious act that you're doing throughout the day, and then you can affect it and change it. And if I could do that for the nerve in my hand, why can't you do that for parts of your brain? If you sort of funnel out all those other things, you can focus every bit of focus, for lack of a better word, on that and heal it. It makes complete sense to me, but even from like a scientific standpoint.
That's what people with the multiple personality disorders, they're able to do that. Mm. They're able to, you know, with one personality have a very, very severe disease to whatever, strawberries, and then the other personality can start consuming strawberries and have no allergic reaction at all, like one of the other personalities.
Wow,
can.
Yeah.
It's hard not to think, it's hard to, if you're an outside perspective, and it's hard to disassociate yourself and be like, you know what, that person has it's a mental disease, and it's hard not to laugh at that, because we laugh at those people in our society. I feel like we don't look at them as sort of someone who's undergoing something that we don't understand.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love the movie Split.
I heard it's an amazing movie. Yeah.
Oh, they're making a sequel to it with Samuel L. Jackson as one other character. And I think Bruce Willis's character from...
is that M. Night Shyamalan?
Yeah.
He's back?
He's going to bring all three of them together. So I think it's Bruce Willis's character from Sixth Sense.
Oh, wow.
And tied in with the character from Split. Oh, wow. James McAvoy. And Mr. Glass is the name of the Samuel Jackson's character.
In Unbreakable?
Maybe. So they all have different mental disabilities.
Interesting. That would be a good
movie. Not disabilities, but mental...
Capabilities.
Capabilities.
All right. You're good. You can tell you're in public speaking.
The preview looks unreal. Looks really good. Cool, I liked Split. I didn't enjoy the ending of Split, but I was like...
I'll have to put it on my list.
Yeah. James McAvoy crushed in that movie.
I just think that people are very hesitant to think this certain way because they feel they have to follow a certain guideline. And so even going down to the simplest form of meditation, I needed to meditate when I was going through a dark time after this near-death experience. And for a period of maybe like a month, I was able to do it on a daily basis, but then I wasn't. And it was because anytime I would be to myself, I would have all these negative thoughts and I would feel very nervous. And also I was getting sick again. So it was all of this. I had post-traumatic stress disorder. And so for me, like I wasn't able to meditate. And even I was living in New York City at the time.
Oh God.
And you know, like when you're on the subway, everyone's listening to music basically, or you're walking through the streets. I wasn't able to do that because every song like reminded me of something that made me cry. I was just in a very like emotional, fragile state. And so I remember sitting on, and I couldn't just like sit and try to be to myself because then I would have all these negative thoughts come into play. And it was really hard. So I was like, okay, well, I need to focus on something. And I remember I was sitting on the subway and there were so many different sounds going on. And I was like, let me try to hear as many sounds as possible. And it was kind of like a game with myself. So the wheels on the train track, the intercom, the person sniffling, the music through their earphones, the feet shuffling. And when you're doing that, you have to be in the present moment because yeah. It's you have to have so much focus. And so that was my form of meditation. And I later read a book by Thich Nhat Hanh, which talks about like the walking meditation or meditating when you're brushing your teeth. So I was like, it doesn't, and even today, like I don't sit and meditate. I mean, I try different things, but it really just is what works for you. And if you can let go of following a certain like schedule of someone else and understanding like take bits of pieces of what you learn, get inspired, but then create what works for you. And that's with anything, with podcasting, with vlogging, with your business, because I feel like, you know, if you look at any successful person, they have their own success. Like they created a path, they teach that path, but that path's not going to be your path because you're different.
But that's the problem though. I mean, I want that works best for you. Like, oh man, you're motivational speaking, Tim Ferriss. I mean, if you're not going and looking at his books and saying, oh man, I got to be taking some of this, I got to be taking all that, it's so hard for people to accept that something's right for them. What right, is the yeah. right thing for them? Because, oh man, this person can do 7, 12, 14 different things, but I can't. Oh man, I might not be good enough. I'm not doing everything that I could be doing because I can't do what that person does.
Don't you think people just notice what is best for them though? Like people notice the things that they're used to noticing. Mm-hmm. If you're a dad, you're going to notice children a lot more than if you're my age and you don't have children. Like it's just sort of what your focus becomes.
Right.
So I mean, how do you change, like literally get people to shift their awareness?
So that's a good question. Well, you have to know what you want. Do you really want what that person has, or do you just want a part of it? So I teach, I created a course called Be a Public Speaker. And this was because I was getting thousands of messages from people who wanted to become public speakers or grow their business or message through public speaking. Cause that's exactly how I did it, with limited to zero funds. And so when I teach that, I teach it in a way that you can follow the same strategy that worked for me, but you input your authenticity to it. And so immediately you figure it out in a sense of what will work for you. And then people are like booking gigs like this and paid gigs also. It's just, you can create an outline and you could follow people's outline, but remember that you have your own thing to offer the world.
Me and him were talking about this before, actually, how as kids, we were super nervous to speak publicly. Me and him were both athletes. I know he's played basketball in front of 35,000 people, not nervous at all. But you get it.
Just talking in front of 10 people in class, you can feel my hands right now. We're talking. I'm not nervous, but like my hands just get clammy.
The fact that I can do this right now is mind-blowing.
And I would go, literally, college, go in front, speaking in front of class. I know the paper. It's history. Even high school, I froze up, and I was just like, oh, wow, it's going to be much safer if I just stand up here and say nothing. So I stood in front of class.
And you just said nothing?
Just nothing. I just froze. The teacher's just like trying to pander and ask me questions. My buddy Chris, shout out Chris Higgins, is just laughing in the back of the classroom. He cannot believe I'm just holding it. I'm just like, mm-mm.
Like,
I was a major in history. Yeah. I knew everything there was going to be possible to talk about with this paper and the presentation I made. Nope. I'd save if I just curl up into a ball in my head. No one will know a thing.
I have this thought that with content creation being the way that it is, everyone has a camera, everyone has an app that puts them on the spot. Are we becoming more adept at public speaking? Are we, because we're always on some sort of medium in which we're going to be speaking, or is that just making us comfortable with our own thoughts?
That's a really good question. I truly believe it's helping you with public speaking because it's a form of communication. I always say, like, to if you want to practice public speaking and nobody's giving you that shot, like that's what happened to me in the beginning. I started going live and it's like the best practice possible because you're live. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think
he's been saying that over and over again. I'm telling you, practice. We're going live. We're going live right now.
Yeah. Just go live right now. No script.
You just have to. No. Yeah. And it's the same thing. Like, people want that authenticity. When I was trying to say, like, oh, I have to be, you know, the most motivated when I'm online, or I needed a topic and the bullet points of that. Like, mm-hmm. yeah, that could work, but also it's going to take longer. Also, you're not going to go live as much. And so it came to this point where I was just like, you know what? I'm just going to go and talk about my thoughts. And once I did that, it was like 5 people watching to thousands of people because people are starving for that authenticity.
Starving for it.
Yeah. Starving because, I mean, if you think about it, even in my career as a public speaker, what I really think helped me get to that next level was when I was confident and courageous enough to talk about the things I was currently going through and still coming off as this expert. And I put expert like in quotation marks because in air quotes, because I hate that. I mean, it gets thrown around a lot, but what I used to see when I was going through a hard time, I would go see speakers and they would talk about their past and their tragic times that they went through and how they overcame it. And now look at their life. They're successful. You should buy my book. You should buy my program. You should follow me. But I was like, okay, well, you know, you don't understand what I'm going through right now. These 3 tips to be happy is not going to work. And so how I approached it in that sense was, you know, look, my life's not perfect. This is what I'm currently going through. But even through all of this, I'm still chasing after my dreams. I'm still going through this. And, you know, here's what has worked for me and what is, and maybe it will work for you too. And I think that's what connected with people because a lot of people wait until things change, like I said in the beginning, before they do anything about it. And I wanted to show people you don't have to wait. Like, you can help make your life better regardless of the circumstances.
I mean, like, we're, as a species, our communication is nonverbal, right? It's most, we can all pick up whether someone's being real or not. You can't put your finger on it. You can't call that person out and be like, you're bullshitting right now. You're lying. But we subconsciously, we understand when someone's not being true to themselves. So that's why it seems like a simple formula. Just be yourself. Ridiculous, be serious, be scientific, whoever the hell you are, be it. And then people are going to latch onto it because we're starving for authenticity.
But I mean, even what we talked about, the public speaking is, you know, it's ups and downs. Now that people just can talk in a short form or long form to themselves doesn't necessarily mean that when they get into a space with people that they're going to be good at just, you know, one-on-one good dialogue, communication between the other person. It has its gives and takes and ebbs and flows.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same. It's a skill. So, you know, you have to practice skills. So, yeah. I mean, when I never thought I would be able to be a public speaker. I like you, I mean, a little bit different. In middle school, I moved to a new town and I was so nervous. I had no friends. I wouldn't raise my hand in class because I didn't want to be judged. I ran for vice president of Honor Society, or like National Honor Society, and they put my name on the ballot as treasurer. And I was like way too nervous to say anything. So I just became treasurer.
That's hilarious.
But now, like today, I would 100% say something. So it really, it's this journey. You have to have patience.
What does a middle school treasurer do, though?
But she was Donald Trump before Donald Trump. Like, I don't actually want this position. I'm just not going to say anything. I'm just going to go with it. I'm the president now.
But I'm just, it's like this. I'm actually created this new keynote that I just launching with my speaker agency, Campus Speak. I speak to colleges through Campus Speak, and it's a number one thing that people are always asking about or have trouble with is confidence. I mean, especially when you're in that stage, like how can you have confidence in yourself? The more confident you are in front of people, the more you can be yourself, basically. And really studying on this topic of what has helped me gain confidence and where I feel the most confidence, it's this confidence spectrum. And that's like what my keynote's called, the confidence spectrum, because you put me on a basketball court or a soccer field, like I will not be confident at all. I'll still love myself, but that's different than confidence, right? A lot of people confuse self-love with confidence.
Absolutely.
And so you put me on a stage, I'm more confident.
Because I'd be the exact opposite of you. I was like, oh, no, I have no idea what I'm doing in this place. I've never done it before. That's it. No, I'm the best at this. I'm going to go take down the biggest, baddest person, whoever they are, and I'm going to beat them.
Right. So then you ask yourself, like, why do you feel confident at like in that environment? And so if you can understand why you feel confident in that environment, some of the things, not everything, but some of the things you can take and put in that environment of speaking. Mm-hmm. And then you get a little bit more on the confidence spectrum over here. So it's really just understanding what makes you feel confident. Like I feel more confident when I'm with friends, like at a networking event, than if I go alone, right? So I know right away, like that helps me become more confident when I'm with people that support me. So it's just different things like that and just noticing, and that helps you gain more confidence. Mm-hmm.
What were you looking to do when you started this leadership event for women?
Oh, good question. I was speaking all over South Florida and I just noticed this big disconnect between women. I would speak to 100 women in PR, women part of the Chamber of Commerce or so forth. And I just saw that everyone was kind of staying within their own membership group or their own industry. And nobody was connecting. Nobody knew each other. And I was looking for that event. I was looking as a solo entrepreneur at the time. I was looking to connect with an accountant, a lawyer, a graphic designer, a video editor, and all of these people that also aligned with my message. And so I wanted to create this one large event that brought all of these diverse women from different backgrounds, different industries together on the premise of collaboration over competition. Because I truly believe that when you are in that mindset, then you'll be more successful. I mean, it's people that have helped me get to where I am today. And I always say, like, you know, there's enough success for, you know, or room for success for all of us, you know, to rise up to that.
That's our favorite thing, collaboration. You know, we're huge proponents of how much positivity has come out of the shared economies, like Uber, Airbnb. And I like to talk about this. I like to talk about this all the time, how I feel like in the past, or use your cell phone as an example, right? Your cell phone is what is liquid. You've created liquidity for a lot of your daily tasks in your day-to-day life, which would be talking to people on the phone, fax machines, like they've all condensed through apps, right? Social, becoming social. I think the next step that I like to think about is liquid hardware, like your regular life becoming a collaboration, or your regular life becoming liquid. And in that you can see in the form that starts with Uber and Airbnb, how I'm sharing houses with people, I'm sharing car rides with people. And then I think the next step, you know, we talked about digital nomadicism, right? Nomadism. I found out it's nomadism, not nomadicism.
There's no C in there.
But there's still mad in there, and everybody's mad.
So, the combination of people through companies like WeWork, where you can have a shared location where you work, it allows people from different communities and ideas to come together that wouldn't have normally came together. And you're really doing that with your idea, with WEX. You brought together people who had similar audiences, who had similar ideas, but weren't sort of, they were stuck in a rut or.
Yeah, they were just staying within their own industry, their own paid membership groups, like I said, or just in their own home, you know, as a solo entrepreneur. They would go to the same networking events, see the same people, because it was a repetition or it was a comfort zone, or they met their community there. And there's so much more. And I think, I mean, like you said, like the phone has brought us together and brought the world together. I mean, just innovation has, but in a sense of having that expand into collaboration, it's, I think the mindset is, well, one, that you'll be more successful when you share your advice and when you open up to learning from others. But two is understanding that nothing's really permanent. And I think that's what people like a permanent office space or a permanent car, permanent home, and even like this whole movement towards people like our age wanting to be a digital nomad. People are like, no, I want a lease. I want routine. But it doesn't mean that you're like out of routine or that you don't have this structure in your life. I have a lot of structure, but being able to understand that each day is a new opportunity to make new decisions, to create new things and meet new people. I'm always like excited to wake up and excited to do new things, even if it's in that structure alignment, because there are no bounds. And I think it's just understanding the possibilities and understanding that life can be limitless when we collaborate and when we share.
I mean, like, here's a trick, but one of the most obvious ways to grow your audience is by having someone else on your show, whether it's a podcast or YouTube or whatever, who has an audience, right?
Right.
And then they share with, so, okay, that's cool. You're a travel YouTuber and you have other travel YouTubers come on, but you're eventually going to be sharing the same audience. But imagine being a travel YouTuber who has an incredible fitness guru on, and you're showing your audience sort of, no, most of the time they get travel, but every once in a while they get a little bit of like something new to learn from. Oh, you can travel and work out. Let me show you how to do that while you travel. It's an important part, staying healthy. Mm-hmm. Oh, let me bring on sort of a foodie, right? Someone who can teach you a chef, like how to pick out the best restaurants when you go to a new city. Like there's those little things that are always going to be a part of whatever you're doing that's important for you to create awareness for, that they exist. And you do that by collaborating with people outside your network. Then you're sharing networks with people, and then you're helping the world grow. Like,
right. It just expands and expands. Actually, that then it becomes, they always say, like, you know, more money, more problems. Well, the more people you know, kind of more problems, because you have to then keep up with them, keep up relationships. And that's where I'm at in my business, because I've had so many people who have helped me get to where I am. How do I continue to give to them and stay connected? And so that's a whole other strategy and a whole business in itself, really, is to honor those relationships and invest time, just like you invest time in posting on social media.
How do you do it? I don't have an answer to that question.
Well, because Dunbar's number, our minds don't have the capacity to handle more than 150 intimate relationships. And you feel, you know, this responsibility almost, or even if you're in content creation or social media, it's like, I need to connect with each and every person that's messaging me. I want to give them a personal side. I want to send them an automated message or something else. It's just not my, it's not me. It's not my voice. It's not something that's going to betray the message that I'm trying to get out there. Mm-hmm. But then you expand yourself because you're so far outside.
Yeah, like I personally respond to every single DM on Instagram, Facebook. So I say like Instagram, go get me. Facebook is a little, it gets flooded.
Good on you.
Hear that? You know? You hear that?
But just it weighs me down that I don't send people messages back immediately.
But the thing is, it's not immediate. Like not always. I had to not think that I had to answer right now because it was affecting my personal well-being. But there was this one time when this person messaged me again and she got really upset. She's like, okay, well, I'm unfollowing you because you never responded. And I didn't see it because before it didn't have like the request thing. It just all went into one. Now you can organize it a bit more in IGDM. But I got so upset and I was like, I'm sorry. I saw it and wasn't able to respond at that time. So I responded as like, I'm so sorry. I'm not able to answer all of them right away, but here's the answer to your question. And then she's like, oh, no worries. I'm following you again.
But that's the crazy thing. That's like the story of Stan, Eminem song. Like, listen, yeah, man, I just don't write you a note. Like,
that's so true. That's so relevant.
I didn't get to it right away, but oh shit. That was you.
If he could rewrite that track, it would be about IGDMs for sure.
So it's really just understanding that balance. And what I've now, I'm creating like some type of system where I have a CRM in place. And of course, it took time to invest in the right CRM for your business. And I make sure that like once a month I have a time that now once a week, really, I have a time set aside that I reach out to certain people. And I keep track and notes of things that I find out personally. And that's something new. Like every time I meet someone, I pay a lot of attention to different personal attributes, whether they talked about their kids or whether they had
a curse,
a little like screensaver of a bunny, like, oh, do you love kids. Bunnies?
This is important.
You know? So like just things like that. People are so like, how can you help me? How can you help me? But now, like, if you think of it the other way, like, how can I help this person? That is the mindset you want. And that creates that collaborative community. And that's really what I attribute the success of WEX to, is because every single thing from the way that we run our volunteers to the programming to even just the layout of the booth structure and how I redid that after the first event, it goes into such a mindful way of thinking, how is this going to be valuable to the people involved? And like same with every business relationship, I only will do it and say yes if it has the three wins. It's a win for your company, it's a win for my audience, and it's a win for me. If there's one piece missing, it's not going to work.
But that goes in every industry. I mean, service. I mean, people don't, they want someone to come and say, hey, how are you doing today? Welcome to McDonald's. Or, hey, how can we get you today? Do you need a drink yet? They want that personal level. Or even say, oh, hey, did you want that old fashioned? You know, no ice, right? We're going to have it ready for you. Like, people appreciate that. Mm-hmm. That's why even like when we do the DMs, it's like, no, don't put an automated message up. You know, let's tell somebody what brought them here to this podcast, this adventure. And you see the responses in terms of what they feel and what they can tell you about your own show and channel.
It's been one of the best things we ever did. We would send every new person who followed us, or even old people, hey, what is it you like about our page? And like people, all of a sudden, they're connected with you. They started responding, oh, this is what I liked about your page. This is what I liked it. And then it generated like real conversations where we're conversing with these people.
Yeah. And now you know what more content to put out.
Exactly. And now I know what it is that they like and what it is that they enjoy and what content to put out.
Right. Like even yesterday, I posted on my stories, two different stories of different logos that I'm working with for new logos for some of our events. And I usually just have my network of close friends and contacts. I'll like ask for their advice. I'm like, why am I keeping this a secret? Let me ask my audience. And it was the highest engagement for stories. I had like 300 people vote on this, like on the AB thing.
The engagement thing's huge. That voting thing, it's such
and
a
I was
huge...
like, wow, well, thank you for, you know, doing that. But they felt connected because now when they see that logo, they're like, I had a say in that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Smart.
Well, there's a quote by Gary Vee that I preach to everybody, and it's, I think everybody, you know, should just contribute. And he's talked about this before too. Do for your influencers what you want them to do upon to you. Well, the people that you don't even know, they have X amount more followers than you, or they're this much more fame or success in what they do and what they're passionate about. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just finding out what they do, or finding a way to work with them, or do what they do, or give them something that's beneficial. And a lot of people don't see that. They don't see that
right.
You're going to have to give 10 or 100 times more than what you already want in return before you're going to even get that back. Yeah. That just comes even being a good person. In general, if you're just that kind of great of a person that wants to give back and give out to somebody, you're just going to bring
so
that stuff back
in. Yeah, but then it's the same thing, like not depleting your energy. And that comes into play with like getting paid what you're worth and making sure you balance the amount of free stuff you do versus paid. So a lot of people have trouble with that. And I bring that up because so many people have asked me, like, when do you say yes to like stop saying yes to free stuff? And again, it's the three wins. Like if you are not getting paid, but it's going to help you in other ways and you are excited about doing it. Like I still do free speaking engagements. If it's local, if it's someone that has supported me, if I'm excited to speak at that event, but at the same time, you have to be aware of your limits and like what you can do to get yourself. So it's like giving, but at the same time, like where does that balance come into play? And I think so many people ask me that question, and I think it's just trial and error. Mm-hmm. And just always thinking also how it's going to make you feel. Like not so much is this a check off the to-do list, a check off the bucket list, but like how is this experience going to make you feel? If it's going to make you feel happy, excited, give you energy, then why wouldn't you do it?
How do you instill that in people that you coach or talk to or in your audience? Like how do you instill that them to having that same concept? Like it's okay to be philanthropic, but
also to make sure you get what's yours for the work that you're putting in?
Yeah, that's a good question. Like on what I teach, at least speakers and entrepreneurs, I have this like chart that I drew up where it's basically, it's more for speaking, but like if the gig's local, this is just, you could change, you know, what's on the chart. So if the gig is local and it's not going to cost you a lot of money or time to get there, and you're excited about it, then it goes into like the free category that you'll say yes to. If it is local, but it's, or if it's like not local and it's going to cost you money to travel, but it's going to give you brand awareness and maybe you get to like have some great business meetings while you're in the area and you're really excited about it and it's great to put on your speaker page, then it's still gonna go in that free level, and that's like a marketing investment. So it's kind of just understanding what is important to you on this like chart, and that's when you fall into what's free and then what's not. And then at the same time, once you do something for free, then they ask you back next year, they're gonna expect you to do it for free again.
Yeah, people have the hardest time asking. There's a lot of people out there who just have a difficult time asking for anything. I think it's not so. It's like takes a lot of ego out of you when you're asking people for things of yourself. Like asking sales is difficult. I think it's unless
it's
you're
fear.
A natural.
It's fear because you don't want to lose something that's right. You know, potentially there, whether it was free or not. The idea of someone saying no to you not being, well, I liked what you had before, but I don't want to pay you for it. But again, that comes back to you as the individual and the ego, like you said, like. Well, okay, this person doesn't want me to work with them. That's it. Like, okay.
Yeah, you come back with ends at that. Yeah, and then they just walk away and you're like, dang, I would have done it for lower because I really wanted it. That happens. And sometimes you just have to be like, all right, well, you know, I stood my ground and that sucks, but.
It's a Florida law right there. Stand your ground.
You know, it's just, it is what it is. Or what I say and what I teach, like I even have like email templates. I give this to people. Like regarding when I really want a gig, but I would like to get paid, I'll say, let me know your budget and I'll do my best to make it work. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes they come back, and you could do this with sponsorship. You could do this with anything. And sometimes they come back like, oh, our budget's not anything, but we could pay for your flight. You know? So if I never asked anything, then nothing would have gotten covered.
It's the phrasing. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, the same thing goes with, like you said, reaching out to the influencers as well.
Yeah. And it's all up to a certain level. Like now I'm noticing more people are not expecting me to do free gigs, but that was like 5 years coming to this point where they're not expecting it. So it's really where you are in your journey. It doesn't matter your age or anything. It really just matters like what you have achieved and the credibility you have.
Is there anything you hate or just don't like about motivational or public speaking?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good question. Anything I hate?
Yes, hate in particular.
Shh, everything.
Hate in particular. Well, no, okay.
That was me.
Well,
no, yeah.
Don't listen to us.
Okay, well, the things that I have to do now, because now I have like an agent to handle payments and stuff, and ask. I hated that asking, you know, because you should be focused on the message and it's something like that. But right now, I don't know if I hate it, but my least thing that I enjoy is practicing.
I like that. Least thing that I enjoy.
Yeah, the least thing that I enjoy about public speaking is practicing, because I change in a sense, not like change who I am or anything, but my energy changes when I'm in front of people than if I'm in my apartment alone, like staring at the wall and practicing. And so it doesn't get me as excited to practice because I'm going to be so much better. I just like being in front of people versus that. So, and in the beginning, like I read all these books about public speaking. I never got any like professional training, but I read a lot about people like memorizing their speeches, practicing. So it comes off fluidly and like authentic. And I did that for one of my first talks, at my own event back in Hello Perfect days. And I forgot like one word or one line, and it was the worst
thing. You kept
thinking
about it?
Yeah, well, then you forget everything.
Yeah.
You like,
oh, why'd I forget that? Oh, shit.
Because now you don't know what comes next because you memorized it. And so while memorization may work for some, it really is discovering the best practice. Like for me, I bullet point out like my from A to Z, so the story makes sense. And I teach like different formulas, like less like lesson, story, lesson, and different things like that that have helped me cultivate this formula. And so I know where I'm going from each bullet point, but it gives me the room to feed off of the energy. Or if, like, if I saw something on the conference's hashtag and people are talking about something, I can add that into my talk 5 minutes before. And so that creates a real conversational experience. Even if I'm the only one speaking, they feel like I'm in it talking directly to them. And that makes a difference.
How do you feel about the energy of the audience? Like, does that affect you while you're on stage?
Yes. Yeah. You have to, it does affect it. Affect me, because I've seen, I've spoken to audiences that are super excited and like, can't wait to see me speak, because it's like my own event where there's thousands of people coming out to Women in Power Expo. And then I've spoken to groups of like 12 students,
college who students,
are forced to be there. Completely different, but as a professional, like, you can't be different.
But you know, like, okay, these are 12 college students, like, let me do the best that I can.
Yeah, so sometimes, like, I've prepared a keynote, which a keynote I would say is probably over 50 people, you could do a keynote. If there's 12 people, it's going to be really awkward if you're doing like a keynote, like talking at them. I mean, there's 12 people in the room. So you have to be prepared to workshop it out. So mm-hmm. get them more involved. And it's just, it's things that you learn as you get into those different things. But the more you can prepare, the better. And that's like what I teach in Be a Public Speaker. It's how can you be as prepared as possible, not how can you do it like me? Because when you're prepared, then you feel more confident. When you're more confident, you'll perform better.
I'm just really, really thinking about what these younger generations are going to be like when with public speak. Because, you know, you and I have talked about how Generation Z is sort of grown up without some of the skill set that we've had. They weren't outside every single day building up that.
They don't have the interaction. That maybe, you know, we still had growing up. You could, you know. We came into the digital age. They were birthed into the digital age.
Right.
What they know, the kind of connections, the kind of even learning that they get to experience is, you know, with an iPad program. I have a niece who's literally knows how to operate and use an iPad already.
It's going to be virtual reality public speaking.
I mean, the connections are going to be there. There's going to be less face-to-face.
Yeah.
We had a really great photo-based journalist on the show talking about sexuality and relationships. Uh-huh. And talking about, you know, online dating and, you know, where that's leading to. And she feels it's going to be going even more away from human-to-human contact and interaction. Will be even more digital and more online. So that's going to alter the way that we want to connect in.
See, I don't know if I completely agree with that, because, I mean, I'm in the face-to-face business with conferences, and I think more people, because we're so digital, because we're so in front of a screen or our phone or whatever, like, we are craving.
More people have to learn. More people are craving to figure that out.
Yeah, and just to be in front of people. Like, yeah, a connection over the internet is great, but it will never replace a hug or a conversation eye to eye. Like, me and you could talk all day long on Facebook Messenger, but now I actually know you,
mm-hmm.
right?
It's nice to meet you.
But what if we're giving VR? But what if we're both in VR glasses and I see your human face and we're giving VR hugs? I mean, that's pretty realistic.
But the touch isn't there
yet.
It is closer.
Maybe I'm talking the year 2150 here.
No, but I did a VR a few weeks ago, and there was this whole egg-shaped chair, and you couldn't even tell. The thing was, like, rotating and moving around. There was, like, little wishes and vibrations going up my spine, and I was sitting in the middle of a lake on some kind of chair, and all of a sudden, these birds or bats just started flying in your direction and spinning in different directions.
So you had physical...
I could feel physical forces, and you didn't know the chair was spinning and turning at the same time. So you think you're...
Wow.
It's just the glasses.
Where was this?
This is in New York.
Okay.
Little Star. And then all of a sudden, it jettisons me into a vortex or portal, and now I'm in the womb of a woman, and there's a baby in there, and the baby is awake. And you can see...
That just took a turn. It's a completely different turn.
I did not see that coming at all.
You can see, like, all the electric pulses, like, starting to just be developed in its body and its head, and the baby, like, looks over creepily. And it gives you a thumbs up.
Oh.
But you're, like, in the womb, and then all of a sudden, it's over, and you wake up your glasses like, oh, where did I just go? How did I get here?
Wow. Yeah, I definitely think, like, I just think we need to prepare in a sense of, like, be smart with what businesses you're getting into and where you're going, and make sure that you're always innovating, but not be scared too much, like, thinking too much in the future, like, do I need to change it now?
Yeah.
Because there was people that were really early with like cryptocurrency that lost everything, you know? So it's like a fine line of the right
timing. Sorry, that hit home. That's
okay. I'm just saying it's literally everything in life is about timing too. Like my mom always told me regarding relationships, meeting a guy, if you meet a guy when you're just going to college and you guys, you know, you're not in the right space to maybe like make it super, serious. Like it's all about timing in that sense. Like
you might end up with more pain that way than you do.
Exactly.
Than positive. Yeah.
Right. Mm. And that's the same thing with business. Like for Woman in Power Expo, I came up with this idea in 2015. The first event was end of 2016. This is before Donald Trump, you know, was president. This was when Hillary was running. This was before the Me Too movement, the Time's Up movement. So everything that transpired, yes, it helped my business because more people are aware of this change that needs to be made. Did I know that that was coming? No, but it's like all, you know, the right timing.
Do you see a difference in, you know, let's say different administrations in terms of, you know, the amount of women empowerment that you can enact or you can invoke or, you know, to inspire other people, or more people, you know, out there thinking that times are much more different, they're much more harder, and they want to get more involved? Like where's the message for people either wanting to get involved, depending on, yeah, especially with the amount of different political change that's happened?
I think more people are understanding that they can open up with their stories because they know that there's going to be a support system in that sense. And so they have that courage. But my event, so my last keynote at Woman in Power Expo DC was called Me Too Time's Up, Now What? And that's because I fully support the Me Too movement, fully support the Time's Up movement, but that's not my place in this spectrum for change. I believe that in order for real change to occur, you need two different groups of people. You need the people who are brave and courageous enough to share their stories, like the Me Too and Time's Up movement, and because that creates awareness for what needs to be changed, and education is the first step to anything for positive change. And then you need the people that are going to take this awareness and putting it into action. So, because we all are marching, we're all talking about the negative, but who's talking about the positive? And so that's what I hope myself and my platform, WEX, is that. It's the positive part of what is right and what is good with women. Like mm-hmm. how far we have come. How many people are in executive leadership roles? Because we can go on and on about what's wrong, but who wants to talk about the negative stuff? And are we doing anything to change that if we're always talking about what's wrong?
Yeah, it just doesn't seem like there's a space for, you know, either side. If you want to even talk about like the male side or even, you know, these female side, whether it's for you to come out and say, you know, talk about that event that's happened to you, mm-hmm. as well as a male to say, because what is the common male response now? Well, I didn't want to hire her because I'm afraid of I'm going to get fired, mm-hmm. or I just don't want to talk to a woman now because I kind of like you just can't help yourself. Like, right. like that's what it seems like a lot of the male responses are.
That's not good.
That's not good.
That's not good at all.
There's no culture around, you know, even how we can discuss this. Jordan Peterson, when he was on that crazy Vice interview with another dude, they were talking like, well, he made interesting points. Well, men and women just started being allowed to work together in the past 50 or 60 years in an office space. Mm-hmm. And we see what's happened since then, you know. It's improved, but you know it's not a great place for, you know, either side or a safe side for them, for both of them to work comfortably, because we force these people to work together and live, basically work together more than the people they live together. They spend more time,
right?
And now one of the most common things, or most things that we're naturally adept to do, is to have sex. It's what our cells are programmed to do on such a small level, and we're telling these people that we're with, that we have relationships with, whether they're intimate or whether, you know, we're spending so much time with them, that you can't do this and you can't do that and you have to respect each other. This is the way you respect each other, but you can't talk to each other about it. You have to go through an HR department over here. And then we expect everything to be okay. It's just, we're not there yet.
Right. And I think to that, you know, I feel like there's a lot of conversation that needs to happen. And I think big players that need to change the narrative in a sense. And so what I would say, like where my part would be, coming there, like, would be trying to connect female executives with male executives, maybe for a panel discussion to talk about what they're doing and what they're doing, problems and solutions. And so then we have a platform and there's 150 people watching this. And then all of a sudden, one thing that someone said ignited an idea, and then they take it to their organization. So that's like,
You run this movement, because like, that's exactly how I, like, to me, 50 years ago is completely different than today. It's just, what got us there? Well, number one, conversation and debate. You're always going to have like one side and the other, and you're going to have to find a squeeze in the middle to medium to make both people happy. And that's just where you find balanced relationships and in everything in life.
Right.
So the more you have the conversation and you sit down, the better it's going to continue to get. Like, everything is an evolution. It's a continuous evolution. That's why 50 years ago is different than 100 years ago, different than 5,000 years ago, with how we treated women. Like, 80,000 years ago, I was like, right around the campfire, right?
I mean, I'll be the cynic here. I mean, but how do we avoid this tribalism, though? Because, I mean, I can't help but seeing those two sides there. But
like, what she's doing with like sitting people down and showing what works and talking about positives is at least an infinite better idea.
But we're dealing with human beings, and you know, we're still going to be saying, you know, let's say you two are executives right here and having a conversation. Well, where's my little, you know, team right here saying, oh, he's a guy, you know, I like this point. I didn't like how she looked or talked to him over there. I'm just speaking as a cynic level. It's how a lot of humans will talk and see sides. Well, hold on. Wait, why didn't you like listening to this person's point? Well, they're from over here, and I don't like people from over there. Or they're a Democrat, or, you know, they're a feminist. And like, that has nothing to do with the point.
Well, that's the same thing with politics right now. Like, you're either a Democrat or Republican. Like, that's so old way of thinking. Like, nobody is all of one thing. Like,
and, but if you're one of those sides, you have to be pro-gun or anti-gun.
Right, exactly. Or, so it's the same thing. I mean, there's so much change, but we can focus on what's wrong, or we could take one step at a time to changing one thing at a time. And that's going to lead to the bigger picture. I mean, it's the same, like, and I take that approach in my own life since high school. When I was in student government, I made it my mission to make a difference in at least one person's life every single day. And I've held on to that mission. And so that's how I approach everything, or else it's all too much. Like, starting a podcast, like, there's so many things you have to do, but it's one step at a time. And so that's the same thing with change and having that conversation. Mm-hmm. It's little things here and there. And you have to understand that there's always going to be people that are cynics. And unfortunately, some of them are in powerful leadership roles. But there's also a lot of other people who can see a positive change happening and have the power to make it happen. So it's really just perspective and what you focus on. But I think what, like, back to your original question of, have I seen a difference in the women empowerment movement? 100%, and more so than just like with my company, people are coming to find that community of support and see other women who are doing things that they love, whether it's as small as, I don't know, arranging flowers for a party and trying to start their own event party business, to being a VP of Coca-Cola or something. You know, it's all of these different women, and that alone, just being in that atmosphere, ignites something powerful inside to say, like, if they can do it, maybe I can too. And that's how we're going to get closer.
Yeah, I'm just playing the elephant in the room for you guys. You guys to get your points across.
You always need a cynic, and then you always need an excessively positive person, so you can hear both. And then, like, okay, because cynics have, you know, they're always thinking of what could go bad, what can go wrong, and you need that. You need that voice, just like you need the overly positive to know what potential there is.
Real quick, I want to be respectful of your time. It's 3:52.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I know. Good. Need to wrap it up.
I have a thing at 4:30, but I live like 5 minutes, so.
Oh, well. Yeah. Well, you're called. We're good. Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
You're still on the bus with all three of us.
We're still on the bus with all three of us. Do you have any more questions? Because I was going to take it into those last questions.
Yeah, this will be our final segment where we ask
questions. Yeah, we'll go into this one. Now, tomorrow, it's your last speech, whether you're going to be passing away, you're not going to speak anymore ever again. What goes on in your last speech? What do you say? What do you talk about? And is it different from anything you've said before?
In my last speech, I would talk about just not allowing any type of fear to get in the way of you going after what you want, because fear is like the number one thing I've seen hold so many people back. And I would focus like an entire speech around why do people have this fear, and how can you really push through it, in the sense of understanding that your fear is fictional, and something that's not real shouldn't control your life. And I talk a little bit about it in my current speeches, but I would love to like go more in depth, because what I've seen, and maybe I will before my last speech, but what I've seen like after I'm done talking, you know, there's a line of people at the step and repeat waiting to meet me, take a photo with me. And I always make sure to spend time listening to what they have to say. And a lot of them share their story, but they talk about what they just heard and what resonated with them. And I would say 95% of the people said, thank you for speaking, because I've been so fearful, because I speak so vulnerably. Like, I'm scared too. You know, it's okay. Like, you can do it in spite of fear. That's what courage is. And so I would really focus on that, because I hate seeing people settle for less, whether it's in your personal life, in your health, in your relationships, or in your professional life, because of something that's not even real.
Beautiful.
Thanks.
And leaders, last topic of leaders. What do you see the position of leader? How do you look at it as a past, current, and present? And will we ever need a place for people to lead?
Oh, well, yeah, 100% you need leadership. But I always speak on this, and I stick to like what I'm saying is about, there is a new wave of leaders coming through, and that's authentic leaders. It's people that are capable and brave and confident enough to be able to be themselves in that leadership position, and not think that you have to have it all together in order to influence change. It comes down to, how do leaders influence others? And I think the wave that we're seeing, and the wave that I hope to continue to push forward, is influencing others through individuals' authenticity.
Daniel, anything?
Mine's simple. Who's your favorite speaker? Like, who do you look up to the most as a speaker?
Well, I don't know as a speaker, but overall, like,
or anyway,
yeah, person, Sarah Blakely, founder of Spanx. She's on my bucket list to have speak at WEX. She's just so awesome. I can't say anything more about her. She founded this company, and she still owns 100% of it. She's built it up. She was the youngest self-made billionaire. And if you watch her on Instagram stories, she's like showing like making pancakes with her kids, like going through the drive-through in her pajamas. Like, she's just so real. And she has, like, you just don't see a lot of billionaires and self-made at that point act the way that she does. And I think that's like the epitome of the future of leadership and entrepreneurship.
Awesome. Yeah. Alexa, thank you so much for coming out
today.
And letting us roll over that time. Please let us, everybody that we that's listening to the show, let them know where they can find you and connect with you, from the events to your social media pages, and where they should message you is Instagram and not Facebook. Am I correct?
Yeah, Instagram. So you could connect with me at Alexa Rose Carlin all over Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all over social. And then for Women Empower Expo, it's just womenempowerx.com. And same, our handle is Women Empower X. And our events are growing throughout the country, so make sure to follow along to see if we're coming to a city near you.
That's right. There's a secret city out there. We know it. You
don't.
Secret, yes.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Ian, for stepping out. Yes. And I feel like I had a little construction today, too. I feel like I'm a more complete, more well-off person. And guys, thank you so much. You heard where to find Alexa and where to connect with her. And guys, remember, make sure you go check out the podcast. Listen to this show. You made it all the way here. Don't forget to press that subscribe button. Share it with your friend. If you liked it, if you loved it, leave a 5-star review. That's how we grow. That's how we expand. And we really appreciate all you guys, not just for listening this far ahead, but for going out and reaching out and sharing this message, whether it's us, Alexa, anybody else who's taking a ride on the bus. And guys, make sure you go check out the YouTube channel over on the Bus Podcast. Check out all the different video content that we're working on. You got the Amazon portal at onthebuspodcast.com if you want to support the podcast. And you can go shop at Green Roads World for the amazing CBD oil. 15% off, use promo code onthebus. That's O-N-T-H-E-B-U-S. Yes, we throw green squiggly oil over that, you guys, because we believe in it, because we love it. Go check out the amazing product. And anything else?
You said it all.
I said it all. You did. All right, the bus is out.
Electric,
cheers, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
This is the moment for those who...